Welcome into Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by always as Matt. It's raining in Scottsdale, Matt, right now. Your kind of weather.
Yeah, I was about to see that. That's more like it. Like, you can go outside if you want to.
Like that. I really want to go on a run, but I can't.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess for, yeah, broken foot weather, it's probably not ideal.
Yeah, but it's nice still. It's nice.
It's good.
Matt, it was not the most exciting week in sports, but here's what we're going to talk about today, everyone. Here's what's been. I really want to talk about the Astros thing, but right now I'm watching an XFL game, the Roughnecks and the Vipers. So we're going to talk a little bit about the XFL, talk about the Houston Astros thing that's really been taking over baseball and my dreams, for that matter. I've literally been dreaming about Rob Manfred. And then it was weird, man. And then the NFL Combine is this weekend or next week. It's coming up. The NFL Combine is. So we're going to talk about a little bit about some prospects we like, just a little draft chatter, because I love the NFL draft. But we're going to start with the XFL. And Matt, my thing with the XFL, my thought, my opinion is they're basing their premise on Americans will watch any football anytime. And I think with the NFL, it's, you know, the best football in the world. With college football, the reason that's so has such a loyal fan base is that even though it's not as good as the NFL, it's, you know, college, it's where you went to school, it's where a lot of people met their spouse. It's, you know, they associate the football with a lot of memories from college. And even people didn't necessarily go to college there. It's especially in like smaller towns, it's a lot bigger part of the town, of the city. It's a lot about a lot more than just football. Mm-hmm. Where the XFL is just a bunch of dudes, really good dudes, but dudes playing football, you know what I mean? So they're banking on the fact that it's Americans' love for football that I don't think exists to the point that the XFL wants or needs it to, and so it doesn't have an AAF. What was that league last year called, AAF or something?
Well, it started with an A for sure. I don't know which.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's going to be – I mean, I think there are some people that are just love football so much that they're going to watch it no matter what. But I kind of think that what they're – like, it seems hard for me to think that if somebody isn't from one of those places and they don't already have a football team that they would be interested in it. Like, I know L.A. has a team – and, like, in L.A., they can't get people to watch the Chargers, so I don't know why they're expecting people to watch this.
Yeah.
I guess it depends. I don't know. Do you know where the other teams are?
Yeah.
I don't.
St. Louis is the only city that doesn't have a market, like an NFL market. And I actually think St. Louis would be a good city for one of these leagues because they had the Rams and that got taken away. But the other ones are Houston, Dallas, Tampa Bay, New York, Washington, D.C., there's 8 teams, and I think I've named 6, but it's every city has an NFL team already there. And so I think they're just going for like the biggest city thing, where the AAF or whatever, that one's in like Salt Lake City, Birmingham, that was going for smaller cities to try to be like that city's football teams, which I thought was a better idea, but it clearly didn't work because the AFL didn't even finish a full season.
Yeah, but I mean, their problem, I mean, obviously, if people would have watched, they would have fixed some problem, but didn't they have, like, some serious money mismanagement that made it hard for them to be profitable, even if they did have people watching the games?
Yeah, because the guy who bought it, like, they needed, like, halfway through the season, they needed, new investor just because they were running low on money. So the guy bought the controlling part of the American whatever football, AAF, and then shut it down. And the reason he bought it in the first place is just because it had a proprietary gambling technology. And that was part of their thing. They were going, and the XFL does this as well, but they're trying to make it super betting heavy to get people to tune in. But he didn't even get the betting technology. So he just, you know, basically just ruined the league for no reason.
How did he not end up with the betting technology?
Well, because it wasn't part of what he was purchasing. It wasn't like the AAF's technology. It was like a different company or something like that.
So he just like didn't read the fine print?
Yeah, it was like a kind of a big legal thing, yeah.
That is gotta read the service agreement.
So that's why the AAF got shut down. So we'll see. I think like the DC team that plays in the DC United's their new soccer stadium. So it's only like 20 people. If they can make it like that, like I think, I don't know. I don't know if I would go, but I've tuned in for like a game a week for less than a quarter, but I'm still tuning in if it's on, you know what I mean?
Right.
It is fun, I will say, to see players like Aaron Murray. He's playing in Tampa Bay right now. My favorite XFL team, the Battlehawks, Seattle. That's a team. That's an XFL team. But the Tampa or the St. Louis Battlehawks are my team. That's just because they got Jordan Tamu, an Ole Miss quarterback from a couple years ago. So It is fun to see, like, college kids you recognize play. That's like the reason I tune in. But then after a quarter, like, okay, that's fine. We're done.
Makes sense. Yeah. No, I think, I don't know, like football, like I like watching football, but I think having it for 8 months or 6 months or however long we have it is plenty for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because, yeah, I agree. And even with high school football and the parts of the country where that's big, that's because it's part of the, like the town and the culture and not just football. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think NFL Europe worked like that. And I don't know, it's just different, but we'll see. I think they'll finish the year and then go from there. I just don't know enough about the economics to understand how like much money needs to work or like how much money they have to keep it running for a few years until they can develop a sort of a fan base.
But, right. And I mean, they are going to get fans. It's going to be like somebody's going to watch. Like America is really, really crazy about football. It just, I don't know. I'm not going to be one of those people. So now I think this is how we find out just how much Americans really do like football.
Yeah. Matt, let's move on to the Houston Astros, because that's been my favorite story for the last couple weeks, or this week, however long it's been going on for. Here's a quick synopsis. So the Astros were cheating in the 2017 season, also 2018, possibly 2019. They were using a camera in center field to like zoom in on the catcher and figure out what signals they were using. And then they would bang on a trash can if an off-speed pitch was coming. And they got caught because a former Houston pitcher is now with the Athletics. He, in the report with the Athletic, kind of called him out on it. So that's how this whole thing came about. And when the Astros reported to spring training, it was just the biggest mess I've ever seen in baseball. Maybe in any sport, but especially in baseball. Because the owner, Jim Crane, the owner of the Houston Astros, he was getting interviewed and he's like, you know, we won the 2017 World Series. We don't think this affected the game. Next question was, well, how would knowing what pitch was coming not affect the game?
I loved that. That was so great.
Then he said, I didn't say it affected the game, where within a minute ago he had said it didn't affect the game. So that was fun. That was fun. So the Houston Astros spent a couple days fake apologizing, and then the Dodgers got microphones, and Cody Bellinger, what the MVP from last year in the National League, was like, you know, Altuve stole an MVP from Aaron Judge of the Yankees. They stole the World Series trophy from us, called their apology less than authentic. And then basically every baseball player was like, yeah, they suck. Like we're so pissed at them. And then the commissioner called the World Series trophy a piece of metal, which led to another Dodgers player just bashing on the commissioner. And even Mike Trout, who, Matt, I don't think would get recognized. He was the best baseball player possibly of all time, and I don't think he'd get recognized in just a regular grocery store at all.
Yeah.
He was even, like, bashing on the Astros and stuff like that. And now the Astros are getting mad because no one believes their apology. They were like, oh, we're just going to have to go beat everybody And, you know, it's just going to bring us together and trying to be like tough and like play the victim card. And then everyone else is like, no, that's not how this works. You're not going to get people to cheer for you as the underdog here. Like, it's been fun. It's been fun for me. The bummer part for me is that I sided with the Dodger in something. Right. On Team Bellinger.
Yeah. No, does this make you, because I mean, obviously, whenever the Dodgers lose a World Series, that's fun for you. Is there an idea that, like, oh, even in years where they were probably good enough to win, they got cheated out of it? Does that bring you some comfort, or would you have rather they just won the thing?
No, and actually, the irony of the situation is hilarious as a not fan of the Dodgers, because the 2 years, because the Red Sox are another team that's being investigated right now for cheating. And they're the ones who beat the Dodgers in 2018. So I just think it's hilarious that the 2 years they actually had a shot, they got cheated out of it. So I do think that's funny, for sure.
Yeah. That's good. At least we have that. At least we have that.
I'm the good thing, I guess, for baseball is, as much of a scandal as it is, this is the most baseball's been talked about.
Oh, yeah. See, now people are going to be tuning into ESPN to, like, watch the Astros get hit. I feel like the Astros games are going to be on a ton for the first little bit of the season, just because people are going to want to watch somebody get beamed and then a fight gets started. Obviously, that's not something that you want. I just know sports fans, and sports fans are absolutely cheering for somebody to get hit. They're absolutely cheering for that.
You can bet in Vegas which Astro player will get hit first this season.
Oh my gosh. It's got to be Altuve, right? Or is it just going to be who's ever first in the lineup?
Yeah, that's true. Whoever's first in the lineup. I think it's going to be Bregman or Altuve, because Alex Bregman, the third baseman, was apparently like super cocky about it to a lot of pitchers. Like, what's his name? I can't believe I'm spacing on his name. Give me 1 second. But Alex Bregman, give me just 1 second, Matt. This is great podcasting material.
Yes. See, this is the problem where you don't have a research team to look stuff up.
Trevor Bauer, that's his name.
Yeah.
Trevor Bauer was with the Indians. Now he's with the Cincinnati Reds, who has been, like, publicly, like, anti-Bregman, because Bregman's, like, super cocky about the whole batting thing. And apparently the Astros played the Rays and just really hit well against Chris Archer, like, beat him around, the Rays pitcher. And then Bregman this is what Bregman did. He FaceTimed Chris Archer after, because they're tight, I guess, and said, hey, man, you were just tipping your pitches, but you had good stuff. So Bregman had the balls to cheat, like, get video technology to figure out what pitch was coming to against his friend, and then FaceTime the friend and lie about it and just say he was tipping his pitches.
Oh, my gosh.
I think it's going to be Bregman or Correa, because Carlos Correa had an interview with Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, and he told Cody Bellinger to shut the F up.
Oh, because he, like, didn't know the facts?
Yeah, and then literally Correa, like, was stating off all these things that Cody Bellinger, quote-unquote, got wrong, and then Ken Rosenthal was like, well, actually, you did cheat in 2018. Actually, the commissioner's report said this. And then Carlos Correa didn't know what to say, so just told Bellinger to shut the F up. And he was like, it's Bellinger's job to get the facts and know the situation. And I was like, Cody Bellinger's not a detective. He's a right fielder. That's right. Not his job to get the facts. It's his job to beat you guys. And you were cheating against him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, what I liked about that interview is that he doubled down on Altuve's story about don't rip off my shirt, because his wife didn't want him to. Because, like, first, like, I've never seen a baseball player get his shirt ripped off after they hit a home run. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't even realize that was a thing that people did. So it seemed like such an odd thing that Altuve would be like, hey, don't take my shirt off. There'd be no reason for you to. I just want to make sure that you don't actually do it.
Yeah, and then it's flipping off between the wife and the tattoo thing. And You're right, if you just hit a home run to go to the World Series, I can't imagine being, like, thinking about your undershirt, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and even like it just seems like such a weird thing. Like, obviously you're gonna go in and celebrate and stuff, but people aren't gonna be like, yeah, let's take his shirt off. Like, no baseball player has ever done that. Like, somebody's gonna probably tweet in a YouTube clip like, oh yeah, it happened one time in this World Series in 2004 or something, but like it's not like a common thing.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just interesting. I'm excited to see what happens. I don't want to see him get hit in the head. I saw some guy on Twitter was like, the Astros cheated, but if you're arguing that they should get hit in the head with baseballs, you're doing it wrong or something like that. And it was like, no one's saying they should get a ball thrown at their head 100 miles an hour, but also like getting hit in the hip by a baseball, like, is it, it hurts, but it's not like the worst thing in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like you'll get over it or something.
No one's whatever. Saying they should get hit in the head and have brain damage or anything like that.
Right.
But I do, I want to see every fight so bad.
Yeah, there's going to be, yeah, see, I don't think they're going to end up fighting the Dodgers just because I feel like the Dodgers know they're going to be watched more. I feel like it's going to be a team like the Yankees or like who else was good then. Like the Giants were kind of on their tail end. It's going to be like another team that was like good, but didn't quite get to the World Series.
Yeah. Well, the Dodgers and Astros don't even play this year, which is interesting.
At all?
Yeah. Well, because the Dodgers are in the National League.
Oh, they've got to change the schedule, man.
I know, it's weird because like you play some teams all the time and other teams like once every 9 years, I feel like.
Well, yeah. Like how come we got to watch the Astros play? Like, I don't know my divisions very well, but like the Rangers. Like, how come they've got to play the Rangers, like, 20 times?
Yeah, they play, I don't know. I agree with you. It'd be cool to see them switch it up a little bit more, but.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, no, I want to see the New York Astros game super bad.
Yeah, that one will be interesting.
Because the pitcher who, the whistleblower, he plays for Oakland now.
Oh, do they play Oakland?
Yeah, they're in the same division.
Ooh, that'll be fun. That'll be very fun.
That'll be really fun. I'm very excited about that. But yeah, so that's our baseball story. Spring training's supposed to start today, but it's raining in Scottsdale, so I think a lot of the games are getting canceled.
Getting canceled. But, cool. Now I've got two questions for you about this before we move on. Is that all right?
Yeah, go for it.
So the first one is less interesting. It's not even really a question. I just wanted to observe, like, I wonder what it's like to play for the Astros but not to have been a part of the cheating. Like, if you were a free agent and you signed for the Astros, like, this year, like, what's going through your mind right now?
Just, like, are you joking me? Like,
yeah. Like, they're going to get booed, and, like, some of those guys are going to get hit with pitches even though they had nothing to do with it.
Fans aren't going to know, like, whose team you were on in 2017, so they're just going to see the Astros and, like, think you're whatever.
Yeah. So shout out to those guys who are going to have a really rough year for no fault of their own.
No reason.
Yeah, but my second thing that I think is interesting is how, because when I heard this, like, we had heard stories about people stealing signs through cameras before, so I didn't realize that it was going to be quite as big of a deal as it is, but as you hear Trevor Bauer and the Dodgers and Mike Trout, like, it really seems like this is something that other base, like, this seems unique to the Astros, or at least if other teams are sealing signs in this way, they haven't done it to the extent of the Astros or to the level of success to the Astros. And I know, you know, baseball a little bit more than me. So like, what I'm interested in this is in the next 1 to 5 years, do you think we're going to discover that there's actually a lot of teams who are cheating in this way? Or do you think that it is, you know, a really uniquely Astros type thing?
No, I don't. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think it's just going to be the Astros because there it came down from the top, not necessarily the owner, but like it was like an organization thing, not just a couple players. It was literally called Operation Codebreaker, and they had like stats guys having Excel spreadsheets and like analyzing things like that. And it wasn't just a guy on second base trying to see if it was going to be a curveball or not. Because that's, like, the accepted part of it. Like, it's just like in football. Like, if you know what play's coming, you're just going to defend that route or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, in football, if you're on second and you can see it's going to be a curveball, you're going to tell your guy it's a curveball. And that's why if a guy's on second base, they like pitchers and catcher have more elaborate signs. They don't just do like the 1-2 whatever. Because it's just like that's part of the game. But what the Astros did is like little technology, you like centering it in on the catcher, having like a choreographed, like organized thing to cheat. And it doesn't help if I think the Astros, if they're like apologetic or whatever, it wouldn't be that bad. But because they're so arrogant about it, that's not helping their case at all. I don't think it would be as big a deal if they would just apologize. But think, like when the owner's like, it didn't affect the game, and Correa's telling other players to shut up, like shut the F up, like I don't think that's helping their case at all.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm kind of surprised. Like, I think it makes sense for Major League Baseball. I understand why they're not taking away the World Series. Like, we've seen the NCAA do that, and people not really buy it or feel like it's been kind of phony. And obviously, when the NCAA's stripped, it's for something that a lot of people think is unfair and shouldn't be a rule anyway. But I'm kind of surprised that the owner isn't taking down the World Series title. Like, if it were me, I almost wouldn't even want that hanging in my stadium, even if I participated in the cheating, just because of the perception that it's that people have about it.
Well, he said it didn't affect the game, Matt, remember?
Right. Well, that's, I mean, I guess that just shows you, like, rich people are just kind of in their own world. When I say rich people, I mean like billionaire types. Like, I don't mean like people are doing well.
Is Matt, he blamed it on the leadership, and he's the owner. He blamed it on like the leadership and like having a bad influence on players, making it sound like the players are like 15-year-old kids or whatever. And he's the owner. It's his organization. Like, he is the leadership.
Right.
So I just don't get how he could say that and think that was a good thing to say.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I hope the Astros get a lot of ESPN games.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. And Mark Teixeira, Matt, to answer the question a little more, he said, like, the Yankees had a thing where they would be a guy, like, they would use, like, the instant replay, because players and, like, pitchers and stuff are allowed to, like, use replay to see, like, what a pitch, like, just like football players use replay to see what happened. And some players would try to be like, oh, when he does this, it's a whatever. But they stopped because Teixeira would be like, you guys are terrible at this. It's making it, like, harder. I don't, like, I'm even more confused. Like, you're so bad at this. So, like, I think the other teams have tried using replay, but just weren't good at it. You know what I mean? That, like, that's what Mark Teixeira said as far as, like, the Yankees. Because the Yankees and the Red Sox are the other teams that are, like, quote-unquote, have stuff going on. But nothing's going to be bad as this Astros thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I am. I am interested to see what happens with the Red Sox, because I think, like, it sounds like they didn't have going on quite what the Astros did, but it is going to be really interesting if the Red Sox did end up cheating and what happens to them.
I think it'd be so funny if the Red Sox cheated just because of the Dodgers thing again. They lost the first time they're in the World Series in 30 years. They're playing against the two biggest cheating teams in, at least sign stealing perspective, in baseball history.
Yeah, that would be pretty great.
So funny. Houston just got an interception in this XFL game.
Oh, good for them.
Aaron Murray's out of the game, so I don't know who's in at quarterback. But yeah, let's talk about, Matt, let's talk about the NFL draft. Because again, the combine's coming up. I think we both, but I in particular, the draft is like my favorite sporting event. I like it more than the Super Bowl, honestly, unless the Niners are in it. I just love like that team building aspect. I think a lot of people do. That's why they like the draft. They like playing GM, you know, in their head.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, when they play Madden or even FIFA, they're playing as much for like the GM aspect of it as they're the actual gameplay.
Yeah, a lot of people like, you know, sim the games and do the roster construction stuff. So that's what we're going to do. And Matt, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. We don't have a specific thing we want to talk about. So here's what I'm going to talk about starting, Matt, is the 40-yard dash. Here's one change the NFL needs to make. They need to have the players run side by side.
That would be fun.
Because the two players this year are going to be the fastest are Javelin Guidry from Utah and Henry Ruggs, the third from Alabama. I think they're both going to run in the 4.2s. I think they have a chance. I think both of them have a chance to break John Ross, the third's 40 record. And I just want to see them next to each other so bad. Like, it's not the same as, like, who had a, like, seeing the time posted up as far as, like, a race. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Now, is this the Utah kid that, like, set the, like, indoor NCAA track record for the 60 meters or whatever, or, like, won a championship for the 60 meters?
Yeah. So, the nickelback from Utah, but he's better. I think he's better at track than football. He's obviously a really good football player, but he Utah doesn't have a track team, so he ran as, like, a men's track team. So, he ran as, like, an independent and killed it in indoor track. He couldn't do spring because of football season, obviously, but...
Right, yeah.
Legit track speed.
Yeah, no, that would be a good change. I think it would be really interesting. I think you'd see a few faster times. I think you'd see a lot of slower times because I think it would freak some of the people out. But, you know, honestly, that might be what you want is, like, because if somebody gets nervous just running next to a guy, maybe, you know, that's not a guy that you want to draft. I know these GMs are, like, really into these crazy mental theories and the ways that they evaluate their athletes. But I think mentally, I think it would be as interesting as anything else.
Here's what they should do. They should, you know, run the 40s as is, you know, just by yourself, because there's a benefit to starting on your own self or starting on a clock. But the top four, top six, whatever 40s, line up and run a race, even if it's just for entertainment.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I'm they should make the combine a little bit more like All-Star Weekend, you know, have competitions and stuff. You'd get, I mean, I know a lot of people watch right now, but I think way more people would watch if it was like Tua against Joe Burrow in dodgeball or whatever it is that they do. Yeah,
make the quarterbacks do dodgeball.
Yeah, well, because they do that at the Pro Bowl, right?
Yeah, they do dodgeball.
Yeah. So yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, Matt, we need to work for the NFL.
Okay, I'm in.
So many good ideas. Matt, what's your story-wise looking at in the draft? I know it's pretty early in draft season, but...
So I think, you know, this is just a really easy answer, but I'm just looking at, you know, which team is going to trade up to get a quarterback and who is going to risk to his injuries to trade up to get him, because it seems like Cincinnati are going to draft Joe Burrow and he does not want to go there. And I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about that, actually, because I thought that it was, he was like going to be really happy going to Cincinnati because he's from Ohio. And so that's, you know, at least close ish to where he grew up because it's in the same state. But I've been told, you know, that his family's pretty tight with Carson Palmer and a few other people who have been associated with the Cincinnati Bengals and have just had a rough time with that owner. You know, obviously they haven't won a playoff game since I can remember. It's been a very, very long time. So if he's, you know, opposed to that organization, it would be interesting to see, does Cincinnati try to trade down and take advantage of people trying to move up? Do they draft him anyway? Do they just draft Tua number one and then not get as high a value? Is Miami going to trade up? You know, the Patriots don't have a lot of draft capital, but they really need to get a quarterback. So what are they going to try to do? I think it's probably the most interesting quarterback draft since that Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold year.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is, so let's say hypothetically Cincinnati takes Joe Burrow, even though he doesn't want to be there. The reason he's not really looking forward to that is because he's a competitive dude and Cincinnati hasn't really shown any desire to win, you know? Like, I think the owner's just kind of cool hanging out.
Yeah. Well, hanging out and holding Carson Palmer hostage. Like, I feel like that was a bad look.
Yeah, and Joe Burrow's quarterback coach right now is Jordan Palmer. Carson Palmer's brother It's one of the Palmers, though.
Yeah.
What's the third brother's name? I forgot. Because Jordan's the ESPN guy. So I apologize for not remembering this brother's name, but it's Carson Palmer's brother. So, you know, I'm sure he's hearing a lot about Cincinnati there. But let's say hypothetically Cincinnati drafts Burrow. So that leaves Tua at two. And the thing with Tua is he, on a great, like scouts grading wise, and I'm not a scout, so I'm just talking about scouts I listen to and read about. He has as high of a grade as Burrow. He's been playing at a higher level for longer. But, you know, it's just a huge question mark with his injuries. Had three different lower body injuries. And quarterbacks who get hurt in college tend to have injury problems in the NFL as well. But talent-wise, right, there's no denying Tua's there. And even Washington, Tua has a lot higher grade coming out of Alabama than Dwayne Haskins did last year. So Washington is technically in play for a quarterback, even though they're probably going to draft Chase Young or trade down. But you got Washington at two. Detroit could trade out of it. They probably are not going to draft a quarterback. They're probably going to go. For whatever reason, Chase Young falls, they take him. Don't even think about it. I have the hiccups. I'm sorry. They could draft. I think if they don't, they'll draft Jeff Okuda from Ohio State at three. And then the New York Giants are another team that I would really like to trade down. So three and four are teams where if Washington drafts Chase Young, those are the teams that teams like Miami at five, the Chargers at six, the Carolina Panthers at seven. If they let go of Cam Newton, they could make a play to go get Tua. And Jacksonville at nine. I know you don't like it, but because Nick Foles is your guy. But maybe they say, I don't think Jacksonville's in play, but there could be a chance. And then the Las Vegas Raiders at 12, if John Gruden decides to get rid of Derek Carr. So all of those teams could move up to get Tua and or Justin Herbert from Oregon or Jordan Love. Those two are kind of tied for third right now, depending on who you talk to. But that's what's going to be the most interesting is, A, what happens with Joe Burrow, but B, where Tua goes and who trades up for him. Because Chase Young is the best player, but quarterbacks just have that much value that those are going to control where the draft goes. And it's hard because you don't want to pay too high of a price right now, but also like New York, you can't, if you trade with New York, let's say you're Miami, you go up a spot to four, the Chargers could just go to three. So like the Detroit Lions are in a fantastic position here.
I think so. Yeah, that Detroit is interesting. I almost feel like you're gonna be able to predict to his career based on who he goes to. Like I feel like if he goes to one of these terrible teams like Cincinnati or like a Detroit, that he is gonna have a injury riddled career, which obviously I hope he doesn't, but that just seems like the thing that would happen to those sort of teams. But let me ask you this, because you said Jordan Love and Justin Herbert, which I think is interesting, because especially before the season, people were really talking about Justin Herbert being the number one guy, or at least the number one quarterback. How big of a gap do you think there is between, let's say, Tua, for most scouts, is a clear number two right now? How big of a gap do you see between Tua and Jordan Love and Justin Herbert? And so how likely are you, if you're like the Las Vegas Raiders, if you just sit back at 14 or whatever you said and you just end up with Jordan Love, are they going to be happy with that?
I think the Raiders specifically, they're either going to trade up for a Tua or Joe Burrow, or at that point, Justin Herbert and Jordan Love, in my opinion, are closer to like Jacob Eason, who's a back of the first, second round guy, where you would just wait until the second round per se. Talent wise and skill wise, Justin Herbert and Jordan Love might actually be a little bit better than Tua, but Jordan Love has been inconsistent. At Utah State, he lost like his top four playmakers in terms of yardage from last year to this season. Really inaccurate, had some field vision issues where like he made some throws, you're just like, what are you doing? So he's inaccurate, and then just not an accurate passer necessarily, but just inconsistent player is a better way to put it. And Justin Herbert at Oregon, he just never – he has all the skill, can make every throw, but he just never had that wow moment. He never had a big game where he just took over. Like Joe Burrow took over the Alabama game. Tua took over – like the national – Tua had that in his first game he ever played in the national championship where he like won his team the game. Herbert never did that. And that's the issue with Herbert is like, why is this guy so talented and can't – dominate a game and just control? Even Jacob Eason, I think, no, I don't want to say that, but I would rather have Jacob Eason in the second round than Justin Herbert in the first, or even sticking Washington, Anthony Gordon in like the fourth round. I would rather have him than Justin Herbert in the first.
Yeah.
But that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that is. And I think that's why it's like, when you compare it to that, you know, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield was that year too, right?
Yeah, and so was Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. That was all the five first round quarterbacks that year.
Yeah, so you got five first round quarterbacks. This one, there's really two at the top, and then you probably have more teams trying to get a quarterback even than that year. So I think that makes whatever happens this year very interesting.
Yeah, because I think Justin Herbert or Jordan Love, if they, I think Indianapolis or Tampa Bay are both spots where one of those could go without maybe trading down. John Elway loves, especially I think Justin Herbert is in love with him just because he's a big, talented quarterback. So Denver's in play there. Miami at 18, you know, they're probably going to use that to trade up. Denver's at 19. Jacksonville's at 20. So I think there's going to be – I think both of them will go in the first round. And Jacob Eason is a maybe on the first round because he's a quarterback. But I think the year with Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, even though I 100% being honest, I didn't think at based on his college production, Lamar Jackson was a first round quarterback. Clearly he was. So I was wrong on that. But overall, I think that class is still, even with that, my thought process on that is better than these guys, just because I think Allen and if you're drafting Jordan Love, if you're drafting Justin Herbert, you're hoping for a Patrick Mahomes where he has the raw athleticism, the huge arm talent, where if you get him in the right system, right coaching, he can blow up. And that's what you're hoping for with these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair to you, with predicting how well Lamar Jackson was going to do, you always said that it was a thing about his accuracy numbers. You said that he had, you know, the arm talent and the strength and all, and the vision and all those other things, that he just wasn't as accurate as he would like to see. Which, so I think coming out of college, he might not have been a first round pick, because even people like Mina Kimes, who knows a ton about football and thought that he was a first round pick, she talked a lot about how he had to get his accuracy better, and the amount of improvement that he showed this year in improving his accuracy was basically unheard of. So I think you can be a little easier on yourself with not knowing Lamar Jackson was going to be Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I think this year when people talk about like making fun of like Bill Polian, for example, and I don't think Lamar Jackson should have been moved to wide receiver, but I'm saying people were just so hard on trying to bash, insult people who didn't think Lamar Jackson was going to be an MVP candidate. And I think that discredits Lamar Jackson and the improvement he had from his last year in college to his rookie year to this year where he won the MVP. He was so bad his rookie year. Like that playoff game against the Chargers was terrible. And to just say Lamar Jackson was this sure thing and everyone didn't think so was an idiot, I think that discredits Lamar Jackson to an extent. And I don't think that's fair to him. Like, obviously, you don't need to be insulting just to be insulting. But I don't think – I think you need to give him credit for the holes and the in his game that he legitimately worked on and improved to the point where he won MVP.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
But, yeah, as far as non-quarterbacks, Matt, we got about – oh, we're almost done. We got about 3 to 5 minutes left. The one thing I want to talk about is just very briefly, and then we'll wrap up, is receivers. This is going to be like the best receiver class just because it's so deep. You got Jerry Jeudy from Alabama and CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma. One of those guys is going to be the first receiver taken, and it's basically a coin toss between the two. They're probably going to go in the Raiders, the Colts. The Colts are either going to take a receiver or a quarterback, I think, almost for sure. You got Henry Ruggs, who isn't – he's not just like a DeSean Jackson, like a deep threat type guy, but he is the fastest receiver in the draft. And this is in no particular order, by the way. But you got Justin Jefferson from LSU, Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State, LaVisca Chenault from Colorado, who – he's the biggest. He's like a running back size almost. So he's an interesting receiver. Who else we got? T. Higgins from Clemson. I'm just going through the list here. KJ Hamler from Penn State. Michael Pittman from USC. So those are guys. It's going to be interesting to see like if all the receivers make them go super early. Or if because there's so many teams wait on receiver because they'll be able to get one in the later rounds.
Yeah, no, that should be fun to watch for sure. And there's a lot of I know the Eagles draft a receiver pretty much every year, but I'd love for them to get a receiver, and like I hope they wait because I'd like to get one in the fourth round or somewhere around there. There's some positions I think that we need earlier. Secondary, certainly. Offensive line, I would like to strengthen a little bit. But yeah, man, if one of those receivers is available in the fourth or even the third round, that would work great for me.
I think there's an argument that the Eagles need to spend about 11 draft picks on the secondary this year.
Yeah, that's also true.
But I could see him going, if like Henry Ruggs is available, the Eagles pick in the mid-20s, I think. Let me check. 21. Yeah, if Henry Ruggs is available at 21, I think it'd be hard for the Eagles to pass up. But if I were the Eagles, just because I have visions of Eagles secondary just getting burned, I would lean towards someone like C.J. Henderson from Florida, Jalen Johnson from Utah, a cornerback. But
yeah, that's who I would want to pick in the first round for sure as a cornerback.
A.J. Terrell from Clemson. So we'll see what happens, but the Eagles are almost for sure going receiver, cornerback, and they need to. They need to.
Yeah, definitely, because, it's weird. Like, we still feel like we're in the Super Bowl window, but it also sort of feels like it's gone, but you got Carson Wentz, so you kind of got to win now. So it's an interesting situation they've gotten themselves in.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll talk more about the draft. We'll get a mock draft going up. Matt and I are going to be in North Carolina next week. So the next episode, we're going to go to the Carolina Basketball Hall of Fame, Matt. We have to do that. We're going to go to Cameron Indoor Stadium. And did you know, Matt, that Duke University has a Lemur Center?
No, but now that's one thing I'd like to do for sure.
Yeah. So next week, whenever we get to recording, we'll be there for about most of the week next week. So when we do get to record, you'll all get to hear about the Lemur Center in Durham, North Carolina, on top of all the basketball stuff. The Duke and Carolina both have road games, which sucks. So there's an NC State Pitt game that we could go to. We might go to the Carolina hockey game. They're playing Colorado. I got a list of stuff we can do, but we don't have a set plan yet, so we'll figure that out. But
yeah, I'm excited to wing it. Winging it's great.
That could be our annual hockey talk for the podcast.
Yeah. See, I'm more of a hockey once every 4 years for the Olympics. That's kind of my style.
I do watch the gold medal hockey match for sure. America's in it. Otherwise, I don't.
Yeah. You watch just as far as America goes.
Yeah. I get real excited about America. If America is playing Canada in the gold medal match, I am so into hockey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If America's playing Canada, that's about as good as sports can get.
Super into it. That is like one of the top 10 things I'd like any sports team to win is the United States beating Canada in hockey in the Olympics.
Yeah. But if it's not the Olympics, don't care.
Don't care. Me. Don't care at all. Cool. Well, let's wrap it up so Matt can do his thing. I think you got something later on
today. Yeah, I got some. I'm going out with some of the people in our church wanted me to go out with them, the missionaries. So that's what I've got. That's why we're recording it a little bit earlier.
Cool. Well, tell the missionaries I say what up, Matt. If you haven't come over in the musical, that's the move. Again, appreciate everybody listening. apologize for a little bit of an erratic schedule, but we're, for the most part, we're doing once a week against Double Take with Matt and Jakes on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audioboom, Google Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening at this point, you probably have subscribed, rated, and reviewed already, but do appreciate that a lot. And we'll talk to you guys when we get back from North Carolina.